Dog Works Radio is sponsored by Alaska Dog Works. Check out their website at alaskadogworks.com. Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
I'm Alex Stein, and this is Iditarod Through the Decades from Mushing Radio. This week, Episode 5, The Early 2000s. The early 2000s began much as the 1990s had ended. Doug Swingley was a dominant force in 2000 and 2001, winning his third and fourth championships. He also completed a three-peat, winning in 1999, 2000, and 2001. In the early 2000s, the ITC began a more concerted effort to establish an online presence for the race. Previously, it wasn't easy to get updated information during the race, and many fans would find themselves calling into the phone room at Iditarod headquarters to get the latest standings. Much of that information started to move online in the early 2000s, and it wasn't long before mushing fans all around the world could load the latest standings and see when mushers checked into and out of various checkpoints and how many dogs each of them had. This led to many race fans frantically pressing refresh over and over again on their browsers, hoping to see that exact moment when the standings changed to reflect someone having just come into or out of a checkpoint. Although it was great to have access to this information, it still provided a very incomplete picture of what was going on in the race. Many mushers would try to game the system, so to speak, by breezing in and out of checkpoints and then camping a few miles down the trail. And in those days, before GPS tracking, it was impossible for most fans to know exactly what was happening in between checkpoints. Many teachers around the country and around the world had incorporated Iditarod races into their lesson plans going back to the earliest races in the 1970s. Teachers from outside Alaska established informal alliances with teachers in Alaska, allowing kids to communicate about the race and letting the teachers take that raw data and use it to promote learning in various subject areas. In 1998, Indiana teacher Andrea Finney Aufterheide hoped to use the Iditarod as a way to spark the creativity of her students. She presented a formal proposal to the ITC to start a Teacher on the Trail program, which would bring a teacher along with volunteers and the Iditarod Air Force to remote checkpoints where they could interview mushers and volunteers, communicate with classrooms all over the world, and formulate new and innovative lessons using dogs, mushers, and the race itself. Finney traveled to Alaska to defend her proposal before the ITC, but the ITC was lukewarm at best. The race was never easy to put on logistically, and just coordinating volunteers and race officials was always a chore. Finding a way to move a teacher from outside Alaska up and down the Iditarod Trail wasn't something the ITC was eager to do. There were concerns about how to keep the teacher safe in extreme weather conditions, and what would happen if there was a storm, and how to guarantee that the teacher would have access to the things he or she would need without interfering with the way the race was being run. Finney refused to give up, and the ITC eventually agreed to try out a Teacher on the Trail program. Finney designed the program and worked closely with educators and the ITC to make it a reality. Starting in the year 2000 and every year since then, a teacher on the trail has been selected and they have traveled up and down the Iditarod Trail, following the race and finding new ways to use Iditarod to capture students' imaginations and motivate them to come up with new and interesting ways to celebrate both the Iditarod and learning. Over the years, millions of students from all over the world have used materials provided by Iditarod and various teachers on the trail to study reading, writing, math, science, geography, geology, social studies, technology, engineering, art, music, physical education, biology, health, and much more. As the Iditarod's online footprint became more pronounced, many of these lessons became available online in a growing education portal provided by the ITC. There are few times in modern history that we can point to and definitely say that the world changed right there. But certainly, the terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001 were one such time.
One Adam. Just witnessed an airplane crash into the World Trade Center.
Say what?
Explosion. We're heading in that direction.
I don't know if it's an explosion, a plane, whatever. I need a conditions voice since I had over there. Conditions 04?
91 to Manhattan. We just had a plane crash into level 4 of the World Trade Center.
Sorry, I'll be there in 2 minutes if you can't do it.
6-6, and we're double 8 at the World Trade Center.
We're double 8 on the scene, and it's chaos over here. We don't know where to go. Police here can tell us where to go.
19 terrorists from the Al-Qaeda organization took advantage of relatively lax airport security to smuggle box cutters onto 4 planes that were hijacked. 2 of these planes crashed into the 2 World Trade Center Twin Towers in New York City, each of which burned and then collapsed. Another plane crashed into the Pentagon building in Washington, D.C. The 4th plane was likely headed to another target in Washington, perhaps the Capitol building or the White House. But passengers had received word about what had happened with the other 3 hijacked planes, and they fought back against their hijackers, causing the 4th plane to crash in a field in Pennsylvania. The fire at the World Trade Center site burned for months, and very few bodies were ever recovered. Many people were able to evacuate from the Twin Towers, and the death toll from these attacks, which initially was estimated as potentially as high as 50,000 people, turned out to be just under 3,000 people from all 4 crash sites. For a brief period of time, Americans seemed united in a way that they hadn't been in more than 50 years. There was a distinct uneasiness, and people were waiting for additional attacks and hoping that things might someday return to normal, even though that seemed very, very unlikely. Regular television broadcasts were interrupted for days on end, and there was nonstop coverage of events, even when there were very few new facts to report. Martin Boozer, the Swiss-born Iditarod champion, had made his home in Alaska for decades and had married and started a family there. After the 9/11 attacks, he realized that his real home was in Alaska, and he decided to get his U.S. citizenship. Getting U.S. citizenship entails learning a lot about American history and government, far more than most American high school students ever learn. So, even while training his dogs, Boozer set about studying to take the exam that would ultimately give him his citizenship. This is a difficult process, and there was added scrutiny after 9/11 that made it more difficult. At one point, Boozer got frustrated with all of the delays and called long-serving Alaska Senator Ted Stevens, known to many in Alaska as Uncle Ted, to ask for help with his paperwork. Stevens offered to introduce special legislation that would make Boozer a citizen, but Boozer said that wasn't necessary. He wanted to go through the regular process, but he just wanted to speed things up a little. After taking his written test, Boozer was required to perform a language test where a government official would speak a sentence, and Boozer would then have to write that sentence down in proper English. The sentence he got? She had a big dog, which could not be more appropriate. When Boozer came up off the sea ice and onto Front Street at the end of the 2002 Iditarod, his son Nikolai met him and handed him a large American flag. Boozer made his way to the finish line at the Burled Arch, holding the Swiss flag he had at the race's start and waving the American flag he got from his son. And by the way, Boozer's 2002 victory was the first time anyone had finished Iditarod in under 9 days. This was a record that would stand as the fastest Iditarod finish for the next 9 years. The day after he finished, Boozer returned to the Burled Arch with his family and many well-wishers. Judge Ben Esch the acting immigration official for the region, swore in Martin Boozer as a U.S. citizen. In Boozer's oath, he promised to defend the Constitution and the laws of the U.S. against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Boozer made a point of coming out to the Burled Arch to greet and congratulate each and every one of the finishers. A few days after the awards banquet, Martin Boozer, his wife, and their two sons got on four snow machines. Martin's had a large American flag waving behind it, and they rode the Iditarod Trail in reverse back to their home in Big Lake. The journey gave them plenty of time to stop and visit with old friends and supporters in the various villages along the route. In his book, Dogman, Boozer says it took them a week to get back, but it felt longer to him. He says it felt like it had taken him 23 years to finally get home. But that wasn't the only big happening under the Burled Arch in 2002. Defending champ Doug Swingley had a rough race, finishing in 40th place, his worst ever finish. The day after Swingley's finish, he too returned to the Burled Arch, where he married his longtime girlfriend, Melanie Shirilla. Several dozen friends, relatives, and other mushers and handlers witnessed the ceremony, and dogs from Swingley's team stood by as official groomsmen and bridesmaids. With a light snowfall coming down, Race Marshal Mark Nordman officiated over the ceremony and then pronounced Swingley and Shirilla husband and wife. But there was more. Fellow Montanans Jason Barron and Harmony Knavel were also there at the Burled Arch. Barron was a previous Iditarod finisher who scratched in 2002, and his kennel partner Harmony, herself a previous Iditarod finisher, and a finisher in 2002 coming in 41st place just behind Swingley, also got married under the Burled Arch shortly after Swingley and Shirilla. If there weren't t-shirts that showed the Burled Arch and said, "Iditarod, it's a love thing," then there really should have been. The early 2000s were also the time of Team Norway's heyday. In Hurdal, Norway, firefighter Robert Sorley, service technician Cadel Becken, and Sorley's nephew Bjørnar Andersen had enjoyed great success in European dog sled races, including Norway's Finnmarkedsloppet. Together, the three men set their sights on Iditarod, and they named their joint kennel Team Norway. Sorley and Becken both competed as rookies in 2002, and each notched a top 10 finish. Sorley came in 9th and won Rookie of the Year with the fastest ever rookie finish to that point. And Becken came in 10th, less than 3 minutes behind Sorley. There is a large and passionate community of Norwegian Americans living in Alaska, and they embraced Team Norway in a big way, showing up at the start with big Norwegian flags and some of them even wearing Viking helmets. Sorley and Becken decided that they would take turns running subsequent Iditarods, with Sorley running the best of their dogs in 2003 and Becken taking the team in 2004. 2003 was an unusually light snow year, so the ITC made an unprecedented decision to move the restart way north. Previously, the restart had been in various places, often in Wasilla and occasionally as far north as Willow. But in 2003, the restart was moved to Fairbanks. To allow mushers, handlers, race officials, and volunteers time to get to Fairbanks, which is about 360 miles north of Anchorage, the start was delayed from its normal 2 p.m. Sunday time to 10 a.m. on Monday. To make sure the trail was the appropriate length, a loop was added to increase the mileage. The 2003 race roughly followed the 1925 Serum Run route. It ran from Fairbanks to Manly and Tanana, then to Ruby, Galena, Nalato, and Caltag. But instead of going from Caltag directly to Unalakleet, the trail went south to Eagle Island, Grayling, and Anvik, and then back through Grayling again, Eagle Island again, and Caltag again, before continuing on to Unalakleet. Sorley was battling with Jeff King for much of the race, but took the lead on the portage over to Unalakleet, and then picked up speed and increased his lead all the way up the coast to Nome. Sorley won the 2003 race, becoming the second musher after Martin Boozer from outside North America who had won Iditarod. Sorley finished 2 hours ahead of Ramey Brooks, who came in second, and 7.5 hours in front of third-place finisher Jeff King. More than 100 mushers signed up for the 2004 Iditarod, although only 87 started the race. Cadel Beckin was favored to win, running the same dog team Sorley had driven to victory in 2003. But champions like Martin Boozer, Jeff King, and Rick Swenson were not about to let Beckin go unchallenged. Beckin and his dogs rose to the challenge, and a win for Team Norway seemed very much in the cards. Then, just outside of Unalakleet, the unthinkable happened. One of Beckin's lead dogs suddenly died while running. Beckin stopped, figured out what had happened, although not why, and eventually made his way into Unalakleet, where he arrived 1 minute before Mitch Seavey. Beckin was devastated by the loss and contemplated scratching from the race, even though he'd been in the lead and seemed on his way to victory. Beckin was convinced to keep going, and he found himself neck and neck with Mitch Seavey heading up the Bering Coast. It's hard to overestimate the bond between a musher and his dogs, and when one of those dogs dies during a race, that is heartbreaking and demoralizing. Beckin tried his best to make the rest of his race count, but the loss of this dog just gutted him. Beckin would go on to finish the race, coming in third, about 3 hours behind new champion Mitch Seavey and about a half hour behind second-place finisher Jeff King. Had Sorley not won the year before, this would have been considered a triumph, but it was a letdown for fans of Team Norway and made all that much worse by the loss of a cherished dog and a great athlete. In 2005, Team Norway was back in Alaska, this time with Robert Sorley again driving the best dogs. Although there was more snow than in 2004, temperatures were unseasonably high on parts of the trail, making the race a slushy mess. Sorley would later say after the race that there were portions of the trail where mushers could have run wearing t-shirts. Sorley held off challenges from Mitch Seavey, past champs Martin Boozer, Jeff King, and Doug Swingley, and future champs Lance Mackey and John Baker. Sorley reported that he only slept a couple of hours in the 3 days before he finished, and he spent much of that time looking over his shoulder, convinced that some faster team would come up behind him and take the lead. The junior member of Team Norway, Sorley's nephew Bjørnar Andersen, was running a puppy team, and he finished in fourth, breaking Sorley's own record from a few years earlier for the fastest rookie finish by nearly 7 hours. In the end, Sorley won again, besting Ed Eiten by 34 minutes. Mitch Seavey would finish third, 7 minutes behind Eiten. Sorley won a record $72,000 in prize money, as well as a brand new truck. The total purse that year was $750,000. Bjørnar Andersen would return in 2006 to race once more for Team Norway. He finished in a respectable sixth place, about 7 hours behind the winner. And while they would return to Iditarod and race again, the brief period of dominance for the original Team Norway had ended. Didi Genro is probably the most famous musher who's never won the Iditarod. She's finished in the top 10 16 times and come in second twice, missing out on winning in 1993 when she finished just about a half hour behind Jeff King. Didi has long been a fan favorite, well known for her colorful parkas and her ready smile. She was born in Frankfurt, Germany, where her father was serving in the army. She moved to Alaska with her family in 1971 when her father was transferred to Fort Richardson. Didi began mushing in 1979, and she caught Iditarod fever from her mother, an early race volunteer. Didi ran her first Iditarod in 1980 and finished in 24th place. After running Iditarod again in 1981, she flew up the trail to cheer mushers on in 1982 and served as a race judge in 1985. The 1986 race was the one time that she was totally absent from Iditarod since she ran it the first time in 1980. Didi Genro has entered 35 Iditarods and finished all but three times. She is strongly motivated by her faith and is devoted to what she describes as her Iditarod family. Dee Dee is one of the founders of Mush with Pride and has received many awards for her exemplary dog care over the years. She is one of the fiercest advocates for good dog care and has been known to rhapsodize about the bond between humans and their dogs. In the Sockeye fire a few years ago, Dee Dee Genro had very little time to evacuate her property. She was able to save almost nothing of her records and souvenirs dating back to when she first came to Alaska. But she reported being proud of saving the most important thing in her life, every single one of her dogs. In 1996, Dee Dee and her husband, Mike, were badly injured in a car crash that resulted in the death of her grandmother. Dee Dee and Mike were stuck in the car at a temperature of 20 degrees below zero, with Dee Dee next to her now deceased grandmother. When help finally came, it was necessary to use the jaws of life to cut Dee Dee and Mike out of the wreckage of the car. From there, they had to be taken by ambulance over 60 miles to the nearest hospital, where Dee Dee required emergency surgery to repair a ruptured intestine. While Dee Dee was recovering, her old friends and fellow mushers, Susan Butcher and Roxy Wright, kept up the training on Dee Dee's dog team, so that when Dee Dee was ready to return to racing, her dogs would be ready as well. Dee Dee came back and competed in the 1997 Iditarod, where she finished fourth. In July 2002, Dee Dee Genro was diagnosed with breast cancer. She underwent a double mastectomy and months of chemotherapy, which left her weak and exhausted. Again, Dee Dee's friends, including Susan Butcher, stepped in to make sure that her dogs didn't suffer from lack of training. Still, many felt that Dee Dee would not be in any shape to come back quickly and run Iditarod again soon. She finished her last round of chemo in late January 2003 and started the Iditarod just about 4 weeks later. Running a race like Iditarod is exhausting under the best of circumstances, and being 4 weeks out from finishing a grueling course of chemo is far from the best of circumstances. But years of experience, an amazing group of dogs, her faith, and sheer force of will brought Dee Dee all the way through and into Nome in 2003, where she finished in 18th place. It's no wonder that the other finishers that year voted Dee Dee Genro most inspirational musher. Dee Dee was also named honorary chair of the American Cancer Society's Relay for Life. She started putting pink booties on her dog team and wearing a pink parka to raise awareness about breast cancer. Over the years, Dee Dee has also become a very popular public speaker, sharing her history with her dogs and Iditarod, as well as stories of her life as a cancer survivor, a veteran warrior out on the dog trails, and one of the most well-loved and well-respected mushers in Iditarod history. Here's a list of the winners of the Iditarod in the early 2000s. 2000, Doug Swingley, with lead dogs Stormy and Cola, in 9 days, 0 hours, 58 minutes, and 6 seconds. 2001, Doug Swingley, with lead dogs Stormy and Peppy, in 9 days, 19 hours, 55 minutes, and 50 seconds. 2002, Martin Boozer, with lead dog Bronson, in 8 days, 22 hours, 46 minutes, and 2 seconds. 2003, Robert Sorley, with lead dog Tip, in 9 days, 15 hours, 47 minutes, and 36 seconds. 2004, Mitch Seavey, with lead dog Tread, in 9 days, 12 hours, 20 minutes, and 22 seconds. And 2005, Robert Sorley, with lead dogs Sox and Blue, in 9 days, 18 hours, 39 minutes, and 30 seconds. Next time, Lance Mackey's comeback kennel changes the rules about dogs running long-distance races, and Mackey and Jeff King play out one of the most intense rivalries in the history of the last great race. For Iditarod Through the Decades, I'm Alex Stein.
From Dog Works Radio, this is Mushing Radio. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we invite you to subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll find a link on the episode notes. You can tap or swipe on the episode cover art, and you'll see some offers from our sponsors. You can support our show by supporting them. If you like what you have heard, we would love it if you could give us a 5-star rating and tell your friends how to subscribe too. Your hosts are Alex Stein and Robert Forto. Our producer is Robert Forto, created for Dog Works Radio. Did you know that Alaska Dog Works trains service dogs for those in need throughout North America? Each and every service dog that is trained through the Lead Dog Service Dog Program and Michelle Forto and her team has an individual training plan. We train for autistic, mobility, psychiatric, and PTSD for our soldiers for service work. If you know of someone that may need a service dog, please take a moment and check out Alaska Dog Works on social media and at alaskadogworks.com.